Hey folks, this is Carrie Arantikai, reading Keep Track of Losing Days by Giraffter, Chapter 6, Cut Off. Very excited to learn more. Read two chapters yesterday. It was not enough. And now I need to see what happens next. And there's still so many chapters left. Okay. Jiang Wenyin, as it turns out, has been doing some information gathering of his own. Try to contain your excitement, he says tartly as Lan Wangji pages through his notes, face carefully neutral as usual. In the absence of permission to conduct a formal investigation, Jiang has avoided the sort of legwork Wangji and Ye Mingtui have been doing. Where they've been collecting evidence and interviewing witnesses, Jiang has marshaled his own unique set of resources, tapping into the robust, all-seeing rumor mill that fuels conversation in the homes of Seattle's wealthiest Chinese-American families. A scion of the Jiang Microsystems, Jiangs, can get into doors that a detective from Seattle PD wouldn't get anywhere close to. Not that it's done me any good, Jiang gripes. He has pages of notes on a variety of interesting scandals. Who is sleeping with whom? Whose marriage is in shambles? Whose younger son got caught smoking weed after lacrosse practice? But no Wei Ying. None of Jiang Wenyin's and Wei Ying's extensive array of mutual acquaintances have seen him, heard from him, or noticed anything unusual. Jiang has even spoken to Wen Qing, who, from the look of things, had been even less forthcoming with him than she'd been with Wang Ji. One person from the Lakeside Alumni Facebook group claims to have seen Wei Ying downtown on Sunday, the day before he disappeared. Apparently, he'd spotted Wei Ying coming out of the Jin Corps building, but had been too far away to say hello. Could he have been meeting your brother-in-law? Wang Ji asks. Jiang snorts. Not likely. They put up with each other for Yanli Jijia's sake, but they don't exactly hang out when she's not there. No, I'm pretty sure she just saw somebody who kind of looked like Wei Wuxian and is jumping in to make herself feel important. Nope. Is jumping in to make himself feel important. Wang Ji nods, returning to Jiang's case notes. False witness reports of this type are common in missing persons cases. Casual acquaintances develop a sudden strong case of confirmation bias, seeming to remember seeing the missing person everywhere, in places they couldn't possibly have been, or recalling incidents from years ago as though they might have some bearing on the case. It's worth hearing them out, just in case, but most leads of that type go precisely nowhere. This doesn't make sense to me, Jiang says after a while, slapping Wang Ji's case file down on the desk. Why would Wei Wuxian have anything to do with the Wens? I know you don't know him, but this is completely out of character for him. You must have gotten something wrong. Wang Ji refrains from pointing out that statements like that are exactly why cops aren't supposed to investigate cases involving their family members. With Ye Mingtui out of commission, he needs all the help he can get, and it's not like Wang Ji has been a paragon of objectivity during this case. Actually, I do know him, he says lightly, not looking up from Jiang's notes. Ooh, reader's break. Oh, I'm looking forward to this reveal. Okay. Jiang's head snaps up. What? You do? He is my neighbor. A true understatement that's starting to feel more and more like a lie. I agree with your assessment. He does not seem like the type of person to be involved with this sort of thing. Right? I mean, he's stubborn and rebellious, and he has a huge problem with authority, and he's the most annoying person I've ever met, but he's not like a criminal. Wang Ji gets the sense that Jiang is actually speaking affectionately about his brother, but can't quite stifle his indignation on Wei Ying's behalf. I'm annoying. I talk too much. You should just ignore me. Everyone does. How is it that Jiang Wenyin, who grew up with Wei Ying, who clearly cares about him, who should know him better than anyone, can be so close to Wei Ying without seeing him at all? Isn't he? Wang Ji asks, curious about what Jiang will say. He has a criminal record. Jiang's nostrils flare. His face reddens, and Wang Ji can see his fist tighten around the pen. Thankfully, not the click-top kind. He's holding. Look, he growls. I appreciate how hard you're working to find him. But when it comes to what went down with Wei Wuxian and Jin Xishun, you have no idea what you're talking about. Wang Ji sits back in his chair, giving Jiang the full, solemn weight of his attention, wordlessly inviting him to elaborate. Jiang looks away, thrusting his jaw forward. The thing is, he mutters. He looks back at Wang Ji and huffs a frustrated breath. Okay, so, yes, there was a fight. There were a bunch of fights, actually, senior year. Jinsei Xuan was being such a prick. My sister had a crush on him since we were kids, and he finally figured that out, and he was an asshole to her. Wang Ji thinks about Jiang Yan Li's warm, comforting smile, the love in her face in the pictures in Wei Ying's room. He thinks about Wei Ying's righteous fury whenever he sees somebody being picked on, and imagines that fury amplified by a worshipful love for a cherished older sister. My sister is a wonderful person, Jiang continues, echoing Wang Ji's thoughts. That peacock should be so fucking lucky. He and Wei Wuxian were always at each other's throats that year. Wang Ji cocks an eyebrow at him. Fine, Jiang allows, a trace of a smile breaking through his anger. Jinsei Xuan and I were also frequently at each other's throats. He still kind of sucks now, but trust me, he was insufferable back then. Anyway, his face turns serious again. Ajia was home from Lewis and Clark for spring break, and she came to this lantern festival thing the Chinese Community Center was doing. And, like, to this day, I don't even know what Jinsei Xuan said. But Wei Wuxian just hauls off and punches him, right there in front of everybody's parents and friends and all the old people. It was a fucking scandal. Jiang shakes his head, caught somewhere between frustration and admiration. The genes pressed charges? Wang Ji asks. They might not have, if that had been it. My mom went to UW with Jin Furen. They were sorority sisters. I think they could have worked it out, but... Jiang frowns, his face drawing inward. Wei Wuxian is... a lot. Like, he's my brother, I'd kill for him. But half the time I just want to strangle him myself. He was the kind of kid who would, like, goof off in class, talk back to the teacher, hand in half his assignments late, and then, like, ace every test. He's so annoying, Jiang sighs. He hates bullying, and if he doesn't like you, he has zero problem letting you know that. So he was just constantly getting into fights growing up. He got good at it. Wang Ji feels like he's looking at Wei Ying through some sort of funhouse mirror. The picture is somewhat the same, but so distorted as to be almost unrecognizable. He does some meditative breathing exercises. Surely Jiang is now approaching his actual point. Surely he must be close, and this is not just going to be the bad takes and high school memories hour. Jinsei Xuan was always hanging around. He was never quite one of the cool kids, but because he was Jinsei Xuan's cousin, he was, like, allowed. He hated Wei Wuxian, and Wei Wuxian just, like, barely knew he was alive, which pissed him off even more. Jinsei Xuan started the fight, Wang Ji prompts him. He's already guessed as much. That's one way to put it, Jiang scoffs. Another way to put it is that he lay in wait for Wei Wuxian after school with a big group of guys, and they jumped him. Wang Ji blinks, surprised. No one else was mentioned in the police report. Apparently, I wasn't there, I was at swim practice. But apparently, Wei Wuxian goaded Jinsei Xuan into fighting him one-on-one, and it wasn't until he had kicked Jinsei Xun's ass pretty thoroughly that the rest of them jumped in. Jiang's jaw tightens. By the time I got there, everyone had cleared out. Wei Wuxian was barely conscious. He still doesn't remember that entire afternoon. I had to piece this together on my own, which I didn't do until way later, unfortunately. If he was defending himself, especially against a large group, that wouldn't be considered assault, Wang Ji says slowly. It was his word against theirs. Jinsei Xun swore up and down that they were the only two involved, and that Wei Wuxian jumped him, and he was the one defending himself, and his buddies backed him up. Like that ass clown could have ever done that sort of damage on his own. Jiang snorts bitterly. Jinsei Xun's parents throw a big fundraiser for the mayor every year. His dad plays golf with the DA once a month, and they wanted Wei Wuxian's head. And meanwhile, he couldn't even remember what happened. The public defender got them to drop the secondary assault charge in exchange for a guilty plea for the first one. But without a credible alternative narrative, he sneers, doing finger quotes. Apparently there wasn't much more he could do. Fucking joke. Jiang glares into the distance. Public defender? Wang Ji asks. Jiang opens his mouth to say something, then snaps it shut with an audible click. He irritably adjusts the mother-of-pearl buttons at the cuffs of his beautiful sapphire blue shirt. Wang Ji's mind is whirling. A whole lot of pieces are falling into place. Doesn't exactly seem like he's living on Jiang Microsystems money to me. He and my this is tough, sorry. This is a bunch of flashback lines, and I'm trying to remember who said all of them. I think this must have been Jiang Yanli. He and my parents had a falling out about 10 years ago, around the time of his arrest. They're estranged. Against an army of lawyers, what chance did she have? No chance at all. Your family cut him off. Wang Ji knows his face, his voice, his demeanor have all dropped to a temperature approaching absolute zero. He can't be bothered to care. He thinks about Wei Ying, 18 years old, terrified, recovering from head trauma, sitting in this police station alone, standing in a courtroom alone, boarding a prison transport alone. Jiang's face darkens. Oh, like your family wouldn't have done the same, he snaps. Wang Ji tries to imagine what his uncle Tiren would have done if Wang Ji had been charged with assault at 18. Shout at him for days, no question. Take a belt to him, like he'd threatened for years but never actually done, maybe. Try to lock him in his bedroom for a minimum of 3 years, probably. But cut him off? Cast him aside? Never. He suddenly finds himself missing Lan Tiren, who, for all his rules and punishments, loves Wang Ji and Si Chen with the same fierceness he does everything else. Out loud, he merely says, no. Look, everyone thought he did it. Even he wasn't sure he didn't do it. And Jincor is a huge client of Jiang Microsystems. When Yan Li and I finally pieced together everything that really happened, we tried to get Wei Wuxian to sit down with our parents, but... Jiang folds his arms in front of himself and sighs. It was too late. Things had been said. Time had been served. Nobody was really in a forgiving mood. He glances at Wang Ji and straightens up, glaring as though Wang Ji is the one who's been oversharing about family secrets. Not that it's any of your business, he huffs. He's right. It isn't Wang Ji's business, and it's not relevant to the matter at hand. That doesn't make him like it anymore. He sniffs, returning to his notes. Jiang scrubs a hand across his face. I'm going to go get some coffee, he says. I'll try that again. I'm going to go get some coffee, he says, somehow making it sound like an accusation. You want anything? No, thank you. Wang Ji rubs his eyelids, which feel like they've been lined with fine silt after his late night at the hospital. He tries to put the thought of 18-year-old Wei Ying, alone and scared, out of his head. He needs to focus on 28-year-old Wei Ying, who may also be alone and scared, but who Wang Ji is in at least a position to help. Lan! Captain Yao suddenly shouts from the hallway across the bullpen. Wang Ji jumps. He hadn't expected to see Yao today, since the captain avoids working on Saturdays if he can help it. Sir? He asks, rising to his feet, instantly grateful that Jiang has chosen that moment to go get coffee. Yao storms toward him, face twisted in rage. His tie streams out behind him as he moves, but his toupee, as always, stays frozen in place. Just the motherfucker I wanted to see, he snarls. You want to tell me why I just got out of a meeting with the head of major crimes, all about how you stepped all over their case? We were following a lead, Wang Ji says mildly. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Investigate our case? This still the Wei thing? Yao asks. Wang Ji nods. Well, I've got great news for you, detective. Starting Monday, it's not your case anymore. Major Crimes is taking it over. Make sure all the stuff is boxed up and ready to hand over first thing Monday morning. If Major Crimes folds the missing persons case into their larger investigation into the Wens, they'll prioritize pinning Wei Ying's disappearance on someone in the Wen organization over finding him alive. Respectfully, sir, this is Detective Nye and my case. We're close to finding Wei. Yao snorts. I'm supposed to get excited because some ex-con got mixed up with the mob and got himself disappeared for his trouble? That happens every day, Lan. It literally happens every day. Meanwhile, you've flashed your ass all over Nightless City for no reason, and the Wens are going to ground. Every time they do something like this, it's another 6 months before Major Crimes makes any headway with them, and that's all thanks to you. Yao pokes him in the chest to emphasize his point. Now, I seem to recall that you and Ye have 5 other open cases right now, is that correct? Wang Ji draws his equanimity around him and nods, his face completely blank. Yes, sir. With Nye at a commission for the next 6 fucking weeks, those other open cases should keep you nice and busy, Yao sneers. You're lucky I don't bench you entirely, Lan. I don't want to get pulled into another Saturday meeting because of you, am I clear? Yes, sir. Wang Ji waits until Yao has stormed into the elevator before sinking back into his chair. Jiang approaches, clutching a coffee mug and looking murderous. How much of that did you hear? Wang Ji asks. Just the tail end, Jiang says. I take it we're off the case. You were never on the case, Wangji points out. But yes, starting Monday, this is officially a major crimes investigation. Jiang takes a grim sip. Sounds like we better find him before Monday, then. Since Jiang has actually met Xiao Xingchen, they agree that he should be the one to reach out to him. They split up their remaining next moves based on Wang Ji's two hypotheses. Jiang takes the Wens are holding Wei Ying somewhere tasks and goes off to try to track down all the information he can about the Wens' various real estate holdings, while Wang Ji pursues the Wei Ying is hiding somewhere route, returning to the stack of Wei Ying's notebooks in hopes of some clue to his whereabouts. He doesn't find any leads as to where Wei Ying might hide. But in the last notebook, the one from Wei Ying's locker at work, Wang Ji begins to find himself. It starts out relatively innocuously, the word ridiculous drawn in elaborate hand-lettered script across one page. Wang Ji instantly warms, thinking of their first meeting, but dismisses the thought. Wei Ying, he has learned by now, is in the habit of doodling words that are on his mind, and there's no reason to think Wang Ji in particular inspired this one, just because it's something he says occasionally. A few pages later, among scribbles of code and more indecipherable notes, 150WQGWT, G/W/T. Don't know. Wei Ying has doodled the word shameless in big, puffy graffiti-style lettering. The following page, shameless again, this time drawn as though the letters are covered in frost and dripping icicles. Underneath it, there's a sketch of a little bunny, similar to the one Wei Ying had drawn on his check at the cafe the day they met. Wei Ying had been thinking about him. That was nice, even if the icy tone implied by his doodles didn't indicate the highest opinion of Wang Ji's words. Bunnies start appearing more frequently among the other scribbles and doodles. Wang Ji lets his fingers trail over the sketches, which are imbued with a great deal of life in just a few hastily drawn lines. At first, they're just doing generic cute bunny things, hopping, sleeping, eating carrots. As he keeps turning pages in the notebook, though, the bunnies start developing distinct personalities. A black bunny, with a large, messy clump of hair on its head and a red ribbon tied around one ear, lies flopped down onto its belly next to a white bunny who is sitting stiffly upright. The white bunny, this time wearing a little colored shirt, frowning at the black bunny, who is scratching behind one long ear, tiny hairs flying everywhere. The white bunny, still sitting upright with a tiny smile on its face, the black bunny leaning its head softly against the white bunny's fluffy shoulder. The two bunnies with a tiny baby bunny between them, smiling at each other while the baby bunny waves a small butterfly toy. The white bunny, with a look of total bunny outrage, as the black bunny leans in and kisses it on the cheek, a little heart floating out from the spot. It's them. It's them. And even as Wang Ji's pragmatic heart searches for alternate explanations, tries to explain it away as coincidence or meaningless doodling, he can't deny the fact that it's them. It's him, over and over. He spares a moment to be grateful that he's the one going through the notebook, not naming Jue or, nightmare of nightmares, Jiang Wenyin, then turns another page and has to stop, has to breathe, because this time it actually is him. Wei Ying has drawn him sitting cross-legged on the roof, looking away, his hair falling over one eye. As usual, his face appears almost completely expressionless, but Wei Ying has captured a softness around his eyes, the corners of his mouth. He looks relaxed, amused. That amusement carries down into the lines of his shoulders, the easy set of his hands. Wang Ji can't think of when Wei Ying could have drawn this. He must have done so from memory. Every line of the sketch is suffused with tenderness. No one has ever seen him like this. Wang Ji closes the notebook and presses a hand over his mouth, feeling raw, exposed, bereft. We are into a flashback. As with most Sundays during the summer, Wang Ji spends the morning warring between his hatred of crowds and his desire for fresh produce. Today it's overcast and there's a light drizzle. Summer is starting to wind down. On the plus side, the start of the rainy season will mean fewer people at the farmer's market. He decides to risk it. He's testing the ripeness of a pile of peaches, debating whether or not he should pick up some sweet onions, when he feels something grab onto his leg. He looks down. A small child, maybe 3 or 4, is clinging thoughtlessly to his knee, looking around open-mouthed at the busy market around them. Wangji smiles down at the boy's head, remembering the times when, as a child, he had grabbed the wrong blue-jeaned leg at a department store or supermarket and found himself gazing up at a stranger instead of his mother. What's the best way to alert this child to his mistake without upsetting him? Wangji clears his throat. Hello there, he says softly. The boy looks up at him, but instead of the shyness, embarrassment, or confusion Wangji might have expected, a wide smile breaks out over his chubby-cheeked face. Gaga, he says, his sweet little high-pitched voice punching Wangji right in the heart. A line is starting to back up behind them at the peach stall. Wangji tries to remove the child from his leg, but he merely clings on tighter, snuggling up like Wangji's chinos are the cuddliest teddy bear ever. Wangji ends up sort of crab-walking over to the curb with the kid affixed to him like a barnacle, aware of the indulgent smiles of the people around him. He thinks about explaining that this isn't his kid, but that seems like it might be somewhat counterproductive, what with all the hugging. What's your name? He asks the child once they're out of the main crush of people. Where are your... He almost says parents, but catches himself in time. Where are your grown-ups? The kid just beams up at him again, bouncing a little on Wangji's shoe. Wangji starts scanning the crowd, trying to see if he can spot any other Chinese people. Of course, the kid could be adopted. There's no guarantee that his family is Chinese. But he'd called Wangji Gaga. Can you stand up? He asks, feeling foolish. Let's see if we can go find your grown-ups. He reaches down and catches the boy under his armpits, trying to pull him up to his feet. The kid promptly does that weird floppy thing kids do, where they suddenly have no bones and weigh twice as much. He slips out of Wangji's grasp and plops down onto the sidewalk. It's only a drop of a couple inches, but the kid's eyes go wide and startled. Oh, are you okay? Wangji asks. The kid's chin starts trembling. He seems to be debating whether or not he'd like to cry. Wangji tries to remember what you're supposed to say to kids when they hurt themselves. You took a spill. But you're okay. The kid appears to decide that he'd better go ahead and cry. He squinches his eyes shut and opens his mouth in an unhappy wail. Big, fat tears squeeze through his eyelashes, the most perfect round tears that Wangji's ever seen. It's almost overpoweringly cute, which doesn't help the rising sense of panic Wangji feels as the kid begins to howl in earnest. Around him, people are giving them sympathetic glances, clucking their tongues and murmuring things to each other like, "Aw, someone's having a rough time." Help me, Wangji thinks at them, fruitlessly scanning the crowd again for anyone to whom this child might possibly belong. Yuan, he hears someone call. Ah, Yuan, there you are. Someone runs up, sweeps the crying child up into his arms, and turns to Wangji, and he's somehow not surprised at all that it's Wei Ying. Oh, hi, Wei Ying says to him, giving the child a small bounce. Fancy meeting you here. He turns to the boy, who is rapidly recovering from his upset now that Wei Ying is there. Wangji can relate. Yuan, you're supposed to stay right by me when we're at the market. Did you get a little lost? The child, Yuan, apparently, nods, scrubbing at his eyes with one pudgy fist. Wei Ying makes a sympathetic face. That sounds scary. I'm glad I found you. This is my friend Lan Zhan, he says, turning back towards Wangji. Lan Zhan, this is Ai Yuan, Wei Ying continues. My son. Wangji has no idea what his face is doing, which mercifully means it's probably not doing anything at all. Wei Ying has a son? How has he never mentioned this? Wei Ying manages to keep the calm, matter-of-fact look on his face for another few seconds before bursting into peals of delighted laughter. Your face, he says, wiping away a tear with his free hand. You should see your face. Oh man, did you really think I had a whole-ass 3-year-old child this whole time? Attempting to preserve what last shreds of dignity remain to him, Wangji straightens up and gives Wei Ying an imperious look, which just makes Wei Ying laugh harder. Shameless, Wangji admonishes him. Yuan has apparently recovered from his tumble. He leans his head against Wei Ying and watches Wangji with huge, solemn eyes. Yuan is my roommate's cousin, Wei Ying explains, once he's calmed down enough to talk again. Or like their second cousin? Second cousin? He asks Yuan, who grins at him. Something like that, Wei Ying says. We're hanging out today while his grandma recovers from a sprained ankle. He sets Yuan down. Oof, you're getting heavy. It's nice to meet you, Yuan. Wangji squats down to look him in the eye. Would you like a peach?
Yes,
Yuan exclaims, just as Wei Ying is saying, oh, Wang Jian, you don't have to. Wei Ying may also have a peach if he likes, Wang Ji says evenly, straightening up and offering Yuan his hand. Peaches acquired, they move back out of the fray and find a bench that's only slightly damp. As he has every time he's seen Wei Ying in public since their excursion to the park 3 weeks ago, Wang Ji makes a quick, surreptitious scan for dogs. The coast is clear.
I was thinking we might go to the park after this, Wei Ying says, but it's not the best day for it. Maybe the library? He asks Yuan.
Yuan takes an enormous bite of peach, chewing vigorously with his little round cheeks covered in fruit and juice. Okay, he mumbles. Take smaller bites, you anaconda, Wei Ying scolds him. He rummages in his pockets. I can't believe how much peach you already have on you. Like, I'm not even mad about it. That's amazing. Yuan takes another enormous bite. Juice drips down his chin onto his t-shirt, which has a bunnies and hedgehogs motif. Reader's note, I've said this before in a previous, I think it might have been Half Agony, Half Hope or something. But yeah, I didn't realize how often you would have to admonish children to take smaller bites until I was around small children. And that felt like half of our conversation for a good couple of years. Small bites, small bites. Okay. Wang Ji reaches into his pocket and pulls out a handkerchief, which he hands to Wei Ying. Of course you have a handkerchief. Like, an actual cloth handkerchief, just carrying that around with you. What was I thinking? Wei Ying says. Of course you do, Lan Zhan. He winks at Wang Ji and starts trying to dab peach juice off of Yuan's increasingly sticky face. Hold still, little gremlin. Oh my god, it's in your eyebrows. How? Yuan beams beatifically up at Wei Ying and offers him his rapidly disintegrating peach. Xiangaga, he chirps, and it's all Wang Ji can do not to actually put his hand to his chest and swoon from acuteness. Wei Ying smiles at him, and, unhesitating, leans down to take a bite of the slobbery, half-eaten fruit. Thank you for sharing your peach, Yuan, he says. There's something warm and tender and absolutely genuine in his eyes as he looks at the kid. It loosens something deep inside Wang Ji. He would be a good father, he thinks, and has to hide his face behind a bite of his own peach in case Wei Ying could somehow read that embarrassing, sentimental thought in his expression.
I'm done,
Yuan announces. He holds out what remains of his peach in Wang Ji's direction and drops it, without bothering to look to see if Wang Ji will take it from him. Wang Ji catches the squishy object without comment. You can't just hand people your garbage, bud, Wei Ying protests. Sorry about that, I can take it, he says to Wang Ji, holding out his hand. It's all right, Wang Ji says. He gets up and deposits his own peach pit and the soggy remains of Yuan's peach in a nearby trash can. When he returns to the bench, Wei Ying has produced a butterfly-shaped toy from somewhere and given it to Yuan, who begins racing around the bench, flapping the toy's wings happily. Wei Ying stretches an arm out along the back of the bench and takes a bite of his own, as yet untouched, peach. Wang Ji can feel Wei Ying's arm behind him, not touching him, just draped there on the back of the bench. And he knows that Wei Ying just sprawls out wherever possible. But he can't quell the ridiculous, simple happiness that's oozing out from his belly. It's nice of you to babysit, he says to Wei Ying, mostly to have something to say. It's nice of him to babysit me, more like, Wei Ying replies. He's taking big, messy bites of the fruit, clearly ignoring his own advice to small Yuan. A drop of the juice runs down the soft, paler flesh on the inside of Wei Ying's forearm. Wang Ji supposes he should just get used to the idea that things like this will completely wreck him. He realizes that he didn't hear the last thing Wei Ying said and sternly takes a hold of himself. Yuan's Wai Po is so awesome, Wei Ying is saying. She's been raising Yuan Er since his parents died, and she even lets me play with him sometimes, despite the fact that I'm basically a stray cat that wandered in off the street. He waves a hand. She's got quite the little collection of orphans at this point. I bet she's cooking dinner for us right now instead of staying off her ankle like she's supposed to. Wang Ji staunchly approves of this woman he's never met. Wei Ying should be loved, as much as possible, by everyone he meets. It's baffling to Wang Ji that this appears to not be the case. Anyway, since I've been especially good and smart and charming lately, Yuan has generously agreed to spend the day with me. We're going to have fun, right, buddy? Yuan nods his agreement, flashing his little seed pearl teeth.
He's zooming the butterfly around, making loud vroom, vroom, swoosh sounds. He clambers up onto the bench, crawling into Wang Ji's lap in his effort to take the butterfly airplane even higher.
Yuan, stop that. You're bothering him, Wei Ying says, flushing.
I don't mind, Wang Ji says quickly, ignoring the very sharp little elbow that socks into his stomach. Let him play.
He's going to get you all sticky, Wei Ying points out.
The patina of peach juice that still covers Yuan, despite Wei Ying's best efforts, is rapidly picking up a coating of lint from Wang Ji's shirt.
I don't mind, Wang Ji says again.
Yuan flops down onto his lap and says, Butterfly, jitterfly, motherfly, and laughs uproariously. Wang Ji looks down at him, feeling his lips draw upward into a smile. He glances up at Wei Ying, who's staring at Yuan with a strange sort of wistfulness. Wei Ying catches his eye and grins and winks. The wistful look is replaced with a playful, exaggerated pout.
Yuan-er, have you forgotten me already? See how fast you replaced your Xiangge-ge? My own son, my flesh and blood, who I grew and birthed with my own body?
No, Yuan giggles.
Did I not? Are you sure?
Wei Ying puts his hand on his heart and rolls his eyes around in a caricature of distress.
Oh, woe is me, your poor neglected father, who planted you in my garden and raised you up from a tiny turnip seed.
No, squeals Yuan, scrambling out of Wang Ji's lap and into Wei Ying's. Wei Ying makes a little oof sound and looks pained. Wang Ji is reasonably sure Yuan has just kicked him in the crotch.
He does still love me. It's a miracle, Wei Ying croaks, wrapping the kid up in a hug.
Yuan grins and throws his arms around Wei Ying's neck, bashing him in the face with his butterfly toy as he does so.
What do you say, Ayuan? Wei Ying asks, when he's recovered from the assault. Should we head to the library and see what damage we can do?
We've probably taken up enough of your Sunday, he says to Wang Ji. I'm sure you have less annoying people to hang out with.
No,
Wang Ji says truthfully.
No? You don't have anyone to hang out with?
No, you're not annoying. Never annoying.
Worried he's not expressing himself well enough, Wang Ji forces himself to add,
I like hanging out with you.
Wei Ying's eyebrows raise up almost to his hairline. He drops his head down onto Wang Ji's shoulder in a mock swoon.
You can't just say things like that, Lan Zhan, he complains. How am I supposed to cope with you being so nice to me?
You'll manage, Wang Ji says.
Wei Ying smells like peach juice and shampoo.
I guess, Wei Ying says.
He hauls himself to a standing position, scooping Yuan up along with him.
Say goodbye to Zhangge-ge,
he tells Yuan, shooting Wang Ji a wicked smile.
Bye, Zhangge-ge,
Yuan exclaims stickily, opening and closing his fingers in a wave. Wang Ji watches them walk away, Yuan's tiny fist clutching trustingly in the back of Wei Ying's shirt. Wei Ying's full hips swaying slightly more than usual under the added weight of the child, feeling hopeful and devastated and absolutely drowning in love. Back to non-flashback. Xiao Xingchen is a rail-thin, serious man in a white meat-is-murder t-shirt. With his narrow chin and watchful eyes, he reminds Wang Ji of a fox. In the bustle of the coffee shop, he holds almost preternaturally still.
I appreciate you coming down,
Wang Ji says, aware that Jiang had spent almost half an hour on the phone cajoling him into speaking with them. According to SPD records, Xiao Xingchen's been arrested half a dozen times in conjunction with various protests, but never charged with anything. He can see why the man might be reluctant to share any information whatsoever with the police, and why he'd refused to so much as step foot in the actual police station.
Wei Wishan is a friend, Xiao Xingchen says simply.
Much as he wants to dive right into the subject of Shui Yang and what he might want from Wei Ying, Wang Ji decides to take an indirect approach. Xiao Xingchen seems ready to bolt at any moment.
You had a party 3 weeks ago, is that correct?
He asks him.
Yes.
And Wei Wuxian was in attendance.
You must know that he was if you're asking me about it, Xiao Xingchen says, his voice surprisingly gentle for such a contentious statement.
Did you speak with him?
Briefly, yes. I was busy with my hosting duties.
What did you talk about?
Of course, this was several weeks ago and I had been drinking, so my memory of our conversation isn't perfect, Xiao Xingchen says carefully. We get it. Your words are successfully shrouded in caveats. No one would be able to hold you to any of this in court. Now please get on with it.
Jiang grumbles.
Xiao Xingchen smiles, closed-lipped and surprisingly sweet, and Wang Ji sees the first glimmer of someone Wei Ying could like.
We talked about coding, mostly. Wei Ying's done some work on our volunteer organization website. He was complaining about how people think websites have to be either ugly or slow, and about how the modern web over-relies on JavaScript. He had a lot to say on the topic, actually.
Which means he was drunk, Jiang interjects with a roll of his eyes.
Another smile. I couldn't speak to how much he'd had to drink.
Wang Ji has to admire the care with which the man selects his words, the deliberate way he's talking his way around declarative statements. If he had to guess, Wang Ji would say that Xiao Xingchen is either good friends with a lawyer or has been coached through giving more than one deposition in his time.
Most of what Wei Wuxian was saying was over my head, I'm afraid, but he was talking about a new code library he'd written, Xiao Xingchen continues.
Who else was part of this conversation?
Wang Ji asks. I don't know who might have overheard. It was a crowded house party.
Was Shui Yang there?
Jiang demands, and Wang Ji cringes inwardly. So much for the indirect approach.
Xiao Xingchen goes still again. The wary, watchful look returns to his eyes.
We know you know him, Jiang expostulates. And we know he met Wei Wuxian at your house that night. You might as well tell us about it.
Please, Wang Ji says quietly.
Jiang looks irritated, but purses his lips and echoes, please.
What does Shui Yang have to do with anything? Xiao Xingchen asks slowly.
Wang Ji shoots Jiang a look that miraculously keeps him from saying any more.
We have reason to believe he may have been involved in Wei Wuxian's disappearance. This seems to hit Xiao Xingchen like a slap. He rocks backward in his chair. The calm, careful, suspicious manner drops away from him, leaving him looking shaken.
Really?
That's really not good, Xiao Xingchen says faintly, resting his elbows on the table and looking down at his hands.
Jiang shifts restlessly in his seat.
Yeah, no shit. What was that psycho doing at your party anyway?
Xiao Xingchen frowns at his hands, then looks up to look Jiang in the eye. Song Lan and I broke up.
Really? Jiang asks. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, Xiao Xingchen sighs. It was a whole thing. He covers his eyes with his hands for a moment and sighs again before continuing. I met Shui Yang when I was gathering petition signatures downtown, and he asked for my number, and I thought, why not, you know? He's hot, I'm single, why not?
Nice to know that even the virtuous Xiao Xingchen isn't immune to a rebound fuck, Jiang snorts.
Nice to know you're just as charming at work as you are in your personal life, Jiang Cheng, Xiao Xingchen retorts, but he's smiling again.
Wang Ji does not kick Jiang under the table. Wang Ji is an adult.
Shui Yang and I only dated for a couple of months, Xiao Xingchen says. Things got out of control pretty fast. That party was right before I broke it off with him.
So he was there,
Wang Ji says. Xiao Xingchen swallows.
Yes.
And he spoke to Wei Wuxian.
Yes, for a while. It was kind of a relief, actually. Shui Yang didn't really get along with many of my friends.
What did they talk about?
Like I said, coding.
Excuse me.
And how modern websites are inefficient. Some of the work Wei Wuxian's done for our volunteer organization website, this code base Wei Wuxian apparently invented. I wandered off to make the rounds, and when I came back, they were still talking about it. I was surprised. Shui Yang isn't typically interested in computer stuff, and he, doesn't handle being bored very well. Xiao Xingchen shivers, perhaps unconsciously. After the party, Shui Yang texted Wei Wuxian about some project he wanted help with. Do you have any idea what that might have been? Xiao Xingchen shakes his head.
No idea. Like I said, that was right before I broke things off. I didn't even know they'd been texting. He laughs, looking a little sick. I'm a little jealous. How fucked up is that?
Me too, Wang Ji thinks. And very.
Do you really think Shui Yang had something to do with Wei Wuxian going missing? Xiao Xingchen asks, stricken.
Right now it's our best theory,
Jiang replies. If Shuiyang were involved, Wang Ji says carefully, can you think of anywhere he might keep someone if they were working on a project for him?
Sorry, quick reader's break. I mean, like, can you imagine just, like, going on a date with somebody and, like, him being a murderer? Like, an actual legit murderer? That's so fucked up. I don't blame Xiao Xingchen. Like, that's not something I would ever... That would never be on my radar. That would just not be on my radar at all. Like, you could think somebody's a jerk, but, like, an actual murderer? That's so wild. Okay. So, can you think of anywhere he might keep someone if they were working on a project for him? Keep someone, Xiao Xingchen whispers to himself, the blood draining out of his face. Fuck. He shakes his head, increasingly rapidly. No, I don't know. Not his apartment. He can't stand for anyone to be there. It makes him upset. He swallows hard, blinking. No, I can't think of anywhere. He practically lives at the nightclub where he works. He doesn't really go anywhere else except on errands for his boss. He glances up at them. Do you know about his boss? Wang Ji nods. He told me he was a bartender, Xiao Xingchen murmurs, staring down at the table with wide, haunted eyes. I thought he was a bartender. They ask a few more questions, but it's clear that Xiao Xingchen is too rattled to be of much more help. He agrees to call them if he thinks of anything else that might help, and stumbles out of the coffee shop, looking a little green. Poor guy, Jiang says. Can't be much fun to figure out your ex is a serial killer. Can't be fun might be something of an understatement, Wang Ji thinks. They walk back towards the station. Honestly, if Wei Wuxian was hiding out somewhere, the first place I'd look would be with Xiao Xingchen and his merry band of anarchists, Jiang says. I half expected it to turn out that he was waiting out the trouble on some hemp farm or something, but I talked to a bunch of them, and none of them have seen him. Wang Ji doesn't reply. It was a slim chance to begin with, and it's looking less and less likely that Wei Wuxian's disappearance was in any way voluntary. Of course, if that was the case, Jiang continues, apparently not requiring Wang Ji to participate in their conversation. His roommates would know about it. Hell, Wen Ying would probably go with him, and then Wen Qing would definitely know where they were, because he doesn't do anything without her knowing about it. Not if he knows what's good for him anyway, he chuckles. Wang Ji thinks of Wen Qing's formidable demeanor and has to agree. Even a beloved younger brother would have to think twice before crossing her. How is Wen Ying, by the way? I didn't get a chance to talk to him when I went by there, Jiang says. I didn't speak with him either, Wang Ji says. I believe Nie Mingzhui tried to get him on the phone, but was unsuccessful. Yeah, he's not great at keeping his phone charged. I'm surprised he hasn't been by the station, though. He and Wei Wuxian are tight. Jiang spits, making no perceptible effort to keep the bitterness out of his voice. All part of Wei Wuxian's whole found family thing, since I guess his actual family wasn't enough for him. His actual family doesn't want him, and you're the one who told me that, Wang Ji thinks grumpily. Trust Jiang Wenyin to be offended instead of glad that his brother had more people to take care of him. But Wen Ying is like his little sidekick, the Robin to his Batman, the Igor to his Dr. Frankenstein. I don't even know what that kid is doing with Wei Wuxian not around. I was kind of expecting him to be like literally living in your pocket until you found Wei Wuxian. Ni Mingzhui had left Wen Ying multiple messages, both on his voicemail and at his workplace, but Wen Ying had never gotten back in touch. Maybe you should try calling him. Jiang rolls his eyes. I have. He pulls out his phone anyway and makes the call. It's going to voicemail, he says after a moment. Should I leave a message? Wang Ji shakes his head. They've arrived back at the station. When he gets to his desk, he calls Wen Qing's cell phone. Hello. Her voice is hoarse and exhausted. Ms. Wen, it's Detective Lan from Seattle PD. It's Doctor. I'm sorry. It's Dr. Wen, she says testily. My apologies. Dr. Wen, I was wondering if your brother is there. We haven't been able to contact him to ask about Wei Wuxian's disappearance. He's at work. I don't know when he'll be back. When you see him, could you please have him call me at this number? No matter the hour, I'd like to speak with him. Okay, she hangs up. Wangji sets the phone back down in its cradle. She hadn't so much as asked about the investigation. Jung Yin Lee had called that morning, before her brother had even arrived at the station, to ask if they'd made any progress on the case. Usually, friends and family members are all over a missing person's case, asking questions, attempting to investigate things on their own, complaining that the police aren't working hard enough. It's an understandable response to a level of stress Wangji now knows all too well. Wei Ying always talks about his roommates like they're some combination of close friends and bratty siblings. Wangji knows that they spend a lot of time together, and it's clear from their text history that they're heavily involved in each other's lives. So why aren't the Wen siblings breaking down Wangji's door to demand that he find Wei Ying? Deep in thought, he looks up the number of the electronics store where Wen Ying works. "I'm sorry, detective," the manager says when he finally gets her on the phone. "Chung Lin hasn't been in all week. His sister called in sick for him, so you might check with her." He thanks her and hangs up. Wen Ying's sister says he's at work. His work says he's at home. So where is he? What if this isn't one missing person's case? What if it's two? We are back into flashback time. It starts raining in earnest about an hour after Wangji says goodbye to Wei Ying and Yuan at the farmer's market, and doesn't stop for a week. When it finally does, Wangji is busy all day and doesn't get a chance to go up to the roof until it's almost fully dark. He's a little worried Wei Ying won't be there. He's there, though, sprawled out in his usual spot, and Wangji gets pretty close before he notices anything's different. The smell hits him first. Usually, the scent of cheap whiskey isn't that apparent unless Wei Ying hugs him or something, but tonight there's a sharp alcohol reek to the air hanging around his friend. "Hey," Wei Ying says when he sees Wangji, squinting up at him through narrowed eyes. He tilts the bottle up to his mouth, and Wangji can see that it's light, that it's almost empty. "You're drunk," Wangji says, sitting down next to him, closer than usual. For the first time since he gave Wei Ying the key, he's legitimately concerned that the man might fall off the roof. "I'm always drunk," Wei Ying slurs. "Not like this." Wei Ying laughs, holding his nearly empty whiskey bottle up to the light contemplatively. "You're very astute, Lan Zhan." Wangji doesn't say anything. He's seen Wei Ying like this before, although never to this extent. Wei Ying is prone to occasional strange, dark, pensive moods. There isn't always anything to be done about it, other than to sit with him and let him work them out on his own. "Is everything all right?" Wangji asks, just in case, even though he knows from experience that Wei Ying will tell him what's on his mind if he wants to, and nothing will pry it out of him otherwise. "Is everything all right?" Wei Ying blows out a long breath and laughs again. "Yes, Lan Zhan, to the extent that anything can be said to be all right, everything's all right." Wangji waits. Wei Ying pushes himself up to sit upright and look him in the eye. "Really, set up too fast. I'm okay." He puts one hand to his head and smiles. "How are you?" Wangji looks away from him, out into the night. It rained earlier, and the pavement is damp and shiny in places in the streetlight. The chill from the concrete of the roof is seeping through his trousers. "Lan Zhan," Wei Ying says. Wangji doesn't look at him, just waits for him to speak, which is apparently insufficient for Wei Ying. "Lan Zhan," he says again. "Lan Zhan, Lan Zhan!" This time with a none too gentle poke to Wangji's shoulder. Wangji relents and turns to look at him, exasperated and fond and worried. "You like rabbits, right?" Wangji has no idea where this is going, but he thinks of the day they met and says, "Yes." Wei Ying laughs his big dorky laugh. "Maybe I should get a bunny rabbit. What do you think? I could feed him and play with him." He sort of slowly capsizes sideways until he's leaning against Wangji's shoulder. He's very warm. The smell of whiskey is overpowering. "You could come play with him too if you wanted. Feed him a carrot." "Carrots are not actually a good source of food for bunnies," Wangji says. He turns his head slightly, so his cheek is resting against the top of Wei Ying's head. "They are too high in sugar. Bunnies should mostly eat grasses and leaves. And this building does not allow pets." "Oh, of course," Wei Ying says in a fake serious voice. "We have to follow the rules." He snuggles further into Wangji's shoulder. "You smell good. Why do you always have to smell so good?
Meng Ji clears his throat. It's sandalwood, he says in what is almost, almost a normal voice. I always wear it.
Wei Ying hums sleepily. He's quiet for a long time, leaning on Wang Ji's shoulder, long enough that Wang Ji starts to wonder if he's fallen asleep.
Wei Ying, he asks hesitantly.
Wei Ying mumbles. He sits up, swaying a little, and blinks up at him with drowsy, hooded eyes. Lan Zhan, you're so good.
Wei Ying makes a stern face, which Wang Ji thinks is supposed to be an impression of him.
You always do the right thing.
A shadow passes over Wei Ying's face.
How do you know what's the right thing, Lan Zhan?
You also do what is right, Wang Ji points out. You do what is right even at cost to yourself, which most people do not. You try to help people whenever you can.
He feels vulnerable saying this, like he's revealing too much of the time he spent thinking about Wei Ying, but he can't let Wei Ying remain in distress if there's a way he could help.
Wei Ying gives a brittle little chuckle.
What if you help somebody, but you make everything worse? What if everything you do just makes it worse? He mumbles, more to himself than to Wang Ji.
Wei Ying, Wang Ji says helplessly. Would it help to talk about it?
Nope, Wei Ying says, and it's though a door has slammed shut in him. He smiles. Don't mind me, I'm just in a weird mood. Just up here drinking my feelings. I should probably go to bed, he adds, hauling himself up and bouncing to his feet way too fast for the amount of liquor in him. Wang Ji leaps to his feet as well, and can therefore catch Wei Ying as he sways and stumbles forward, thankfully not towards the edge of the roof. He grabs him awkwardly around the waist, Wei Ying catching himself with his hands against Wang Ji's shoulders. Sorry,
Wei Ying mumbles, staring down at the ground between them, breathing heavily.
Sorry, I just got this spins a little bit there.
Wang Ji is quite sure his love for Wei Ying will survive being vomited on, but he really hopes that's not what's about to happen.
Wei Ying is still listing against him.
He braces his weight on Wang Ji's shoulders for a moment to push himself upright. Meng Ji keeps one hand at the small of his back to steady him. He can feel the warmth of Wei Ying's skin through his thin t-shirt. Wei Ying's long eyelashes flutter upward. He meets Meng Ji's eyes with a look of surprise.
Oh, Wei Ying says quietly.
One of his hands drifts upwards from Meng Ji's shoulder to rest against his neck. Meng Ji can't quite suppress his tiny inhaled breath at the skin-to-skin contact, the way the sensation travels down his spine to flutter in his stomach. Wei Ying's little finger curls downward, dragging down the skin of Wang Ji's throat, tucking just underneath the collar of his shirt. He looks at Wang Ji's mouth. Wang Ji can see him do it. He would never kiss someone who'd been drinking, and certainly not someone who's as drunk as Wei Ying is now, but the idea of kissing there nonetheless, hanging in the air between them. But the idea of kissing is there nonetheless, hanging in the air between them, caught in their mingled breath. Slowly, reluctantly, Wei Ying's gaze floats back up to Wang Ji's eyes.
Even your eyebrows are perfect, he mutters.
Wang Ji, who has never given any thought at all to his eyebrows, doesn't know what to say to that, so he doesn't say anything. A minuscule frown begins to appear on Wei Ying's forehead. He looks down and away, but his hand is still warm against the skin of Wang Ji's neck.
You should stay away from me, he mumbles. I'm not good for you. Not good for anybody, he continues morosely.
That's clearly preposterous. So Wang Ji doesn't say anything to that either. He merely ducks down to swing one of Wei Ying's arms around his shoulders and begins to lead him towards the stairs. He half coaxes, half drags Wei Ying down the stairs to Wei Ying's apartment. Mercifully, Wei Ying has enough coordination left to pull his keys out of his own pocket, thus preventing Wang Ji from having to do so and short-circuiting his brain entirely. They make their slow, stumbling way through the darkened apartment, and Wang Ji manages to wrangle Wei Ying into the bedroom he points out as his.
You have bunk beds,
Wang Ji says dully. He has no idea how he might be able to get his inebriated friend up the ladder to the top bunk, and breathes an inward sigh of relief when Wei Ying flops down onto the bottom one.
Bunk beds are fun and practical, Lan Zhan, Wei Ying says. I think everyone should have them.
I'll keep that in mind, Wang Ji replies, slipping Wei Ying's sneakers off.
You don't have to be so nice to me,
Wei-Ying protests.
Huangji leaves him there in search of the kitchen, opens cupboards until he finds a water glass and brings it back to Wei-Ying, along with some aleve he finds in the medicine cabinet.
Take these, he says.
Wei-Ying complies and drinks most of the glass of water before handing it back to Huangji and flopping back down on his bed. Huangji turns him on his side, places a wastebasket next to his bed. Nope, next to his head, and can't quite keep himself from smoothing Wei-Ying's hair back from his face.
Good night, he says quietly.
Good night, Lan Zhan.
Wei-Ying smiles sleepily. The next time Huangji sees his face, it's in a missing persons report. Author's end notes. 7:15:20, there is art of this fic now. Still just, Ceci drew this amazing recreation of Wei Wuxian's journal from this chapter. Check it out here and here. I'm going to click, but it's at Twitter, so... Oh, no. Oh, that's really cool. You should check that out. Oh, and the bunnies. Very cute art of the bunnies. I like that very much. All right. Please enjoy my headcanon of a modern-day Xiao Xingchen as a militant vegan Antifa curb stomper. I'm sorry we don't get to spend more time with him, but he's going through a lot right now, and this story is angsty enough as it is. Thanks to everyone who left kudos and comments. I see each and every one of them, and I love them and you so much. Coming soon in Chapter 7. Some light breaking and entering. Huangji sees a ghost. Updated 6.3.20. So, yeah, this fic is hitting different now, huh? Chapter 7 is done, but I don't think it's appropriate to post it while the actual Seattle Police Department is tear-gassing protesters. I've written out more of my thoughts on my Tumblr with the link to that. But here's the TLDR of my current plans for this fic. Okay. So there's some spoilers in this next part. If you don't want to be... This next part is okay, and then there's a little bit of spoilers. If you don't want to be listening, you can just skip the chapter here. Okay, so back to the author's notes. Chapter 7 is finished. I will plan to publish it next Wednesday, June 10th. For each chapter of this fic, I will be donating $20 to the Northwest Community Bail Fund, which provides cash bail for marginalized people who are unable to afford bail and find themselves incarcerated while awaiting routine court appearances in King and Snohomish counties in Washington State. I sent them $120 today for chapters 1 through 6, and will send another donation each time I post a new chapter. Since this fic started as a fandom Trump's hate work, I will also be donating $20 per chapter to Life After Hate. Life After Hate provides support to people who find themselves without resources after leaving violent far-right groups. I sent them $120 today for chapters 1 through 6, and will send another donation each time I post a new chapter. To be clear, Lan Huangji will not still be a cop at the end of this fic. I've already made some changes to how I plan to handle that based on recent events, but I wanted to let y'all know. If there's anything else I can or should be doing, I'm listening. Be safe, be well, fight hard. For reader's note, I think it's so hard to balance how to live in this world and how to find joy in it. And that was all very generous donations to very good causes. Oh, man. Okay. Gosh, I don't know why I thought they had a fight. Like, I need to go back and look at the chapter. I think it was chapter 1, right? Where we kind of have Lan Huangji's flashback of the last time he saw him. Where it seemed like it was, I interpreted it as more contentious. But it wasn't. It was an almost kiss, which is so sweet. And it feels like they were getting there, right? Like, slow and steady and... maybe there would have been something to push them over the edge, but, you know, you don't, in real life, you don't need trauma to get together with people. Sometimes you just need a few months to get comfortable and stuff. So in an alternate world of this AU, you know, they would have just gotten together without anybody being kidnapped. But all the bunnies were so cute. Okay, so I'm leaving it here for tonight. I cannot wait to read the next chapter. At some point, Wei Wuxian will come to be on page again, and I'm looking forward to that. All right, so I will talk to you folks for the next chapter. Bye.